This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. American chestnuts were once a key part of Appalachian cuisine and culture, but a blight has been plaguing the species for decades.
One of the most important, significant things and gifts that we could certainly give, and that is to bring back an iconic tree.
That story and more coming up on this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Governor Jim Justice has renewed calls for storm relief aid. Jack Walker has the story.
Last week's weather was difficult for West Virginia residents. There were tornadoes, flooding, and high winds that knocked down power lines. To secure federal aid, Justice said Wednesday that he plans on combining the incidents into a single disaster declaration request to the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Justice said this will help meet the threshold for a FEMA disaster and open the state to new aid.
The problem with FEMA is they want a great number of people that are affected, or great amount of property damage and everything that's affected.
Justice also renewed calls for state lawmakers to pass a $50 million emergency response budget, which was not passed in this year's regular session. He said he will push state lawmakers to approve it during the coming special legislative session. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
Internet service providers are now required to display consumer-friendly product labeling meant to root out surprise fees. Randy Owey has more.
The new federal rules say any company, large or small, that offers standalone broadband internet service is required to prominently display consumer-friendly labels at the point of sale. The labeling will resemble the nutrition labels found on food products. The labels must be easy to read and include broadband prices, introductory rate details, data allowances, and broadband speeds. Deputy Director of the White House National Economic Council, John Donenberg, says the labels will help consumers comparison shop for internet service, eliminating obscure terms and fine print.
It will make sure that you have a clear, straightforward explanation of your home internet and mobile plans and services before you sign up for anything.
To see label examples and what the posted terms mean, go to our website, wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Randy Yowie in Charleston.
More than 4.5 million Americans cannot vote because they've been convicted of a felony. On the newest episode of Us and Them, host Trey Kay looks at the patchwork of state laws that restore voting rights to people after those convictions. The laws differ significantly from state to state. A few allow a person to vote from prison, while others require release and completion of probation or parole. Trey Kay meets Anthony Cole, who's been out of prison for nearly a year after serving 12 and a half years. Here's an excerpt from the next Us and Them, Locked Out of Voting.
Started life over. I'm living as a productive citizen. Work for the food bank. I'm trying to give back to the community at the same time, as well as feed myself.
Specifically this year, it's a presidential election. There's a lot at stake for the whole nation. How do you feel about not being able to vote this time?
Well, it does make me feel like less than, because I do like to stay informed on politics, and I do like to at least feel involved, like I'm back into society. I should be able to be a part of society. That's what our country is based off of. That's what our politics and our whole system is off of. It's supposed to be equality, and it really never has been, but it feels even less than now because my voice is completely silenced in that matter.
When will you potentially be able to vote?
The voting laws in West Virginia, I'm not actually 100% sure of the actual time frame, because I would honestly prefer to leave the state to get my rights back. Just the amount of money and the amount of time that I would have to wait, like, it's just not worth it trying to get it back in West Virginia.
Cole has been told that to get his voting rights back, he'll have to get his record expunged. And to do that, he'll have to pay a lot of money. What costs would that be?
Man, they're really expensive. I could look that up.
We both search our phones for a while, checking out different websites.
Hiring the attorney.
Anthony's information has come from people he knows who've recently gotten out of prison.
Ranging anywhere from a few hundred dollars to $10,000.
But it's not lining up with what my producer and I have found through our research. So the way we understand it is that in West Virginia, you should be able to vote after your parole is over.
I can vote in local elections.
Okay.
I don't think you can't vote in a presidential election.
Our research shows Anthony can vote in any election as soon as he gets off parole. But the laws are complicated. We're kind of nervous to tell him anything wrong and get his hopes up. So we sit here, Googling.
As far as voting rights, I'm not 100% sure.
What we're seeing across the country is really a sort of confusing patchwork of laws.
Sarah Carter is a legal fellow with the Brennan Center, a nonprofit dedicated to civil liberties and voting rights. It's her job to track nationwide trends in these state laws. She's not surprised to hear about Anthony Cole's confusion.
It can be very difficult for someone to know their rights.
That was an excerpt of the newest Us and Them podcast episode, Locked Out of Voting. Download to hear more from those who support expanded voter rights and those who say a felon must prove their worth before getting their rights restored. You can download Us and Them podcasts from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, NPR One, or Spotify, and you can also listen online at wvpublic.org. Us and Them is supported by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation. It's 7:49. Showers and thunderstorms are likely later on this morning, and some severe weather is expected this afternoon. We will keep you updated. High temperatures today will be in the 60s to the low 70s. Tonight, rain likely with lows in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cooler with a good chance of rain, highs in the 50s. And for Saturday, partly to mostly sunny with highs in the 60s. Last spring, WVPB covered efforts at Shepherd University to regrow American chestnut forests in Appalachia. 1 year later, that project has incorporated new technology and a familiar tree variant. Reporter Jack Walker caught up with a pair of self-proclaimed chestnutters to discuss the project at large and the future of the American chestnut.
Imagine trees more than 100 feet tall stretching across the skyline of Appalachia. Families resting in the shade down below or collecting husks burst open with chestnuts. Before the 1900s, sites like these weren't just imaginary. American chestnuts once reigned supreme in Appalachia, populating forests in 13 present-day states. But things changed at the turn of the 20th century with the arrival of a new disease, chestnut blight.
And then in the early part of the century, a strain came in that affected the chestnut tree, and chestnut trees began to die, so that by a half century later, or certainly by the end of the century, we had virtually no standing chestnut trees in most places.
Sylvia Sherbert is director of Shepherd University Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities.
Now, the chestnut tree does still live. It lives underground. It's deciduous. And when those trees come up, then the tree will grow for a bit, and then it will die. It will contract the blight.
According to Sherbert, chestnut trees were a pivotal part of pre-Civil War Appalachian history. Chestnut wood helped build log cabins and household furniture. Chestnut forests fostered regional biodiversity, and chestnuts themselves were a staple to 18th century cuisine. That's why Sherbert and the Center for Appalachian Studies jumped at the opportunity to help repopulate the American chestnut.
We really want to engage our students and the community in what I think is probably one of the most important and significant things and gifts that we could certainly give, and that is to bring back an iconic tree, a tree that was the symbol of Appalachia, a tree that was at the heart and soul of what Appalachians stood for.
The project came to the Eastern Panhandle with the help of Susan Thompson. She's a graduate student in Appalachian Studies at Shepherd University and an affiliate of West Virginia's chapter of the American Chestnut Foundation. Thompson began the project last May when she rallied together a team of community members to plant hybrid chestnut trees at a local farm. These trees were hybridized with a mix of Chinese chestnut DNA, which made them more resistant to the blight. After seeing the success of that project, Thompson knew she couldn't stop yet. Now, her team aims to replant pure American chestnuts with a little help from an ecological ally.
When it has a symbiotic relationship with mycelium, which is the plant of that a mushroom grows off of, it's all these white tendrils. Sort of imagine the picture of how you think the internet has threads going in every direction and connections. It's like that, threads going in every direction. Well, they connect with the tree roots, and they spread out another 50 feet. You may have 80 feet of area that a tree can collect nutrients and water.
Planting American chestnut saplings with mycelium can help stabilize water and nutrient intake for the trees in their early years of life. But conservationists still have a problem. How can these fledgling trees survive the threat of chestnut blight? Finding a cure to the disease is a work in progress. Scientists are still looking for answers in the genes of chestnut trees from around the world. One new strategy has helped extend the lives of ailing trees. It involves taping a package of soil around an infected segment of the tree for months on end, which blocks the disease's spread. This isn't a catch-all solution because it doesn't prevent new infections, and it's harder to use on big trees. More than anything, scientists need more information on how the disease works and American chestnut resiliency more broadly. This, again, is where Thompson comes in. She's helping create a website for a new citizen science project that involves logging the life cycle of local American chestnuts online, from planting to infection to treatment. That way, researchers have more information on what works and what doesn't.
It's bringing together minds from all over the country. Probably, you know, potentially we could have people from all over the world. But we're first trying to bring together a group of people in Appalachia who know where these trees are, who can keep an eye on them and provide data about them.
By engaging with volunteers on an online project, Thompson says she and other self-described chestnutters can also offer advice on how to treat infections and protect the species as a whole. Thompson says the project has good traction so far, but it'll still be a while before Appalachia sees widespread chestnut forests like it did centuries ago. Still, Thompson says she and other conservationists are excited by the possibilities American chestnut reforestation provides. This includes protecting Appalachian ecosystems and even combating global warming.
I'd like to see chestnutters making the world cooler. That's the thing. These trees are out there. We know we have this big problem to solve with cooling the earth. We have all these people who are excited about chestnuts. I'd like to see people join our group. Not just in our planting events, but also through the website. You can join from anywhere in the world and use your brain and your resources to bring back the American chestnut and let it do what it does.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
Finally, this morning, students from across the state participated in the 2024 West Virginia Social Studies Fair yesterday. Chris Schultz has more.
More than 500 West Virginia students, ranging from third graders to high school seniors, presented their social studies projects at the Charleston Coliseum and Convention Center. Topics included anthropology, economics, political science, U.S. history, psychology, and more. Dustin Lambert is a coordinator in the West Virginia Department of Education's Office of Student Enrichment Programs. He says the fair gives students an avenue they may not otherwise have to express their creativity and joy for social studies.
It's really interesting to see their own interests and how that blossoms within them. We see projects related to very personal topics as it relates to their communities and even their families.
Lambert says amidst a renewed focus on English language arts and STEM topics in schools, social studies remains important for students to understand the full scope of society. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day at our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Chris Schultz produced today's show. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. This has been West Virginia Morning.